It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrer.
And I'm Veronica Riggert. You're with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up, we'll take our weekly look at the news out of Washington with Central Time political correspondent Harry Enten.
First, the plight of Syrian refugees pouring into Turkey and Western Europe is a large concern for European Union countries and the United Nations. But what's going on inside Syria also has global implications.
The situation became more complex today as Russian jets conducted airstrikes in parts of the country.
Joining us to discuss Russian aims in the Middle East and President Vladimir Putin's recent address at the meeting of the United Nations General Assembly is David McDonald. He's a UW-Madison history professor and an expert on the politics of contemporary Russia. David, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Well, we have these Russian airstrikes in Syria this morning. President Putin said these are limited. They're aimed at ISIS fighters. Others, including some American sources, saying these strikes are not happening where ISIS is. These might be rebels, other rebels, trying to overturn Syrian President Assad. So what might Putin's aims be in undertaking these airstrikes?
Well, I think, first of all, we've got to get confirmation of the information on the designation of the strikes themselves. I was just looking at recent reports in the Russian press, and they have a ticker that says that thus far the White House has yet to confirm that the airstrikes took place in the proximity of the so-called moderate opposition. But that said, I think there are several things going on with Putin's thinking or his security think tank's thinking on the utility of this approach to going after ISIS. Probably first and foremost is, and we heard it foreshadowed in the UN address. I think one thing underlying his whole approach to this part of the world is to defend the principle of the sovereignty of established governments. That if nothing else, right now you've got to establish a stable Syrian state and go after ISIS before you can even talk about the fate of Assad Syria or whether there will be a transition out. He gave a lecture in the UN about the folly of fostering state destruction in places like Libya, and that during the Arab Spring, and said that the other powers should take a lesson from that. And in the back of his mind, too, I also think he's still thinking of the arguments that he made against the Maidan in Ukraine and his involvement there. And finally, in a very different setting than in the European theater, he is staking his claim to Russia's presence as a power and a player in the Middle East, part of a general reassertion of Russian stature in geopolitical questions since, 2008 or so.
And that point about Assad seems to be the key sticking point. Russia, the United States, just about everybody agrees, hey, it's a good thing if we work together against ISIS. The U.S. says Assad, just as bad in many ways, his attacks on civilians driving this refugee crisis in part. But as you say, Putin saying, no, Assad is the closest thing to a stable government we've got. That's got to be our starting point. Do you see those two views reconciled? Will either side give way, at least temporarily?
Well, there seem to be straws in the wind. From what I'm reading, Secretary of State John Kerry has suggested that there might be some willingness in Washington to accept some solution that understands Assad as a placeholder, and then but also as one who will immediately go into transition once the broader crisis in the stability represented by ISIS or ISIL is taken care of.
Syria has been seen as Russia's only staging area base, ally maybe, in the Middle East under President Assad. Is that part of why they are here today doing what they're doing?
Well, I think there will be people in certainly the Russian armed forces that will remind outsiders that they have a Mediterranean port in Tartus on the Mediterranean on the Syrian coast, and that represents Russia's only naval post outside of the territory of the current Russian Federation. I was about to say Sevastopol was the other one, but of course, since last March, Sevastopol has miraculously re-entered, and I say that ironically, the Russian Federation. So it's there. For them, it's a very important staging area. The other thing that I think Russian security experts would remind all of us of is the fact that, unlike us, Russia is geographically contiguous to this area, that they've been dealing with the spillover from the rise of militant and armed Islamism, whether it's Al-Qaeda or ISIL or any one of another, any one of a number of organized formations since the outbreak of the original Chechen conflicts in the early 1990s. So they feel they demand respect for a certain proprietary interest in this area that they believe other powers don't have.
Talking to Russia expert David McDonald from UW-Madison about today's airstrikes by Russia in Syria, targeting, they say, ISIS or ISIL, the terrorist group there. There have been accusations, David, that Russia is taking action here to distract from what's happening closer to their borders. There are activities in Ukraine. You mentioned the Crimea a few moments ago. Anything to that, do you think?
It's really hard to tell. There's an image. There's an image abroad of Putin as sort of a grand marionetteer and conducting this really highly coordinated and mutually reinforcing global strategy. That might be so, but it seems certainly that events in Syria and Russia's willingness or eagerness to intervene do have the temporary benefit of distracting everybody's attention from Ukraine. For what it's worth, I'll note in passing, again, I was looking at a couple of Russian press sources I trust, and one of them noted that given the ceasefire in Donbass right now, that several of the so-called rebels have volunteered to serve as fighters against ISIS in Syria. This, I should note, occurs right under a story in which President Putin tells his defense counsel that Russia has no interest at all in burdening itself with a ground presence in Syria. So there might be connections, but other people would tell you that he has become locked into what one might call a game of geopolitical whack-a-mole, and he's just defending his interests where he can. And we might be establishing connections as much as anything else.
So in addition to the UN meeting, President Putin, President Obama met this week. I think it was characterized as a bit frosty, their talk, maybe an understatement. Do you see room for serious cooperation, maybe coordination with the U.S. and Russia in a place like Syria?
Well, when I looked at that, I was thinking, which of them has any interest in domestic context in appearing to be amenable to the other? It would appear to be a sign of concession or weakness on both their parts, and they both have domestic audiences that are demanding quite the opposite, an assertive policy vis-a-vis the other. Do I think that excludes future cooperation? No, I don't. I think that one thing that has happened very recently is the Russians have begun organizing what they call a coalition that will be an intelligence-sharing consortium involving the Russians, the Iranis, the Iraqis, and the Syrians, which, if it comes to fruition, they're projecting it for the end of next month, we could either construe it as a threat or as a chance to have some sort of mediation with the chief players in the area and through Iraq as a means to coordinate with the Russians. I also see signs that the U.S. Defense Agency or the Department of Defense is at least willing to contemplate the possibility of coordination. What it's going to boil down to is how seriously they really take the threat of ISIL, and if they agree that that's the primary strategic threat, and they can agree to conjoin in dealing with that, then they can deal with the other questions afterwards.
Yeah, before the UN, Obama had said something along the lines of, we'll work with any country, including Russia and Iran, on this issue. Putin said we need something like the anti-Hitler coalition, where the then-Soviet Union and the United States were able to work together despite their differences.
Yep.
Are they both quietly paving the way, maybe, toward that kind of coordination?
Well, I think in different ways and for different reasons and to different extents, I think each group and each leader and their advisors are really they've tried various approaches towards dealing with this ISIL threat. It's both countries and other countries throughout Europe and North America have newspaper stories about their domestics, their citizens, going to fight on the side of ISIS in ISIL in the Middle East. And I think they're finally starting to realize that this threat's not going away through a lack of momentum or a lack of funds, that it's had a lot longer legs than they expected. So I think there is a prospect for some form of limited cooperation, and I think they're starting to come around to that.
David, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
That's David McDonald, UW-Madison professor of history and an expert on the politics of contemporary Russia.